This week on Real Encounters with God, we investigate the ancient Jewish leader Deborah and the battleground of trust.
Welcome to Real Encounters with God, Battleground. Today we're going to look at a very rarely studied warrior in the Bible, specifically a female warrior. Her name is Deborah. So I thought, what better way to start this episode on a female warrior than by going to train with a female warrior, someone who's an expert in Krav Maga. You might say, Krav Mahu, Gesundheit. Oh yeah, you're gonna find out what it is, and I'll tell you what, this woman ain't never seen the likes of me. Hello.
How you doing there, man?
Good. Am I allowed to walk on this, or shoes need to come off?
Shoes can go off, yeah.
All right. I'm Brian.
Nice to meet you. Avi.
Avi?
Hi. Leora.
Leora?
Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you. What are we doing today? Should I be hiding myself already, or should I?
Eventually.
All right, good.
We'll be giving you a nice whooping, yeah.
Yeah. We got this shirt for you also.
So what's this say in the back?
It says Krav Maga, and this is ICCS. Israeli Contact Combat System. So that's what that means. Krav Maga means contact combat. We'll be happy to teach you some stuff.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Thanks, I'll be right back. All right, I'm ready. Somebody wrecked that bathroom.
We don't have a spare cup for you, Bruce, but
be gentle.
Okay. My dad always taught me don't hurt a girl. I'm really concerned here if you fall down and go boom boom. All right, okay.
So I'm gonna get aggressive.
Okay. Am I allowed to defend myself against you?
Yes.
Where's that thing over there? Oh, look at that! Okay! Yeah!
Go to town on him, baby.
You are the aggressor. Get out. Yeah, why am I running away?
Clinch.
Uncle. I wasn't ready. It took me by surprise. It's not fair. I was actually praying for my enemies when she attacked me. I was in a position of love and adoring humanity, and she went violent on me.
That was for you, Brian.
Krav Maga, I feel more like a warrior because of our time today. Thank you, our Deborah in residence.
No problem, you're welcome.
Deborah was judge, governor, and prophetess over the nation of Israel for 40 years. Scholars believe she ruled during the 12th century BC, around the time the Mayan calendar starts. She ruled during a period in history when women were typically seen as little more than property. She commanded generals and chieftains, yet she saw herself as a mother to the Israelite nation. In an era where the people of God experienced both oppression and freedom, she was the consistent voice of God to them, leading them towards his promises.
Well, Tzuriel, here we are again, top five guide in Israel, former Japanese ninja. You've changed the oil in your car with your own bare hands. What are we looking at today?
Well, today we're here in the beautiful hills of Galilee. First of all, we can see Nazareth. Today it's a big modern city, but this is where Jesus spent almost 30 years of his life. At the center of this town, there is a big church, the Church of Annunciation. This is where the tradition points that the angel came to Mary and told her about the birth that will be with Jesus. So this is Nazareth.
It's interesting, as we walk here, people from all over the world are here. There's a group from Brazil back there who are worshiping right now. It's a place where people do pilgrimage because significant things happen here.
Yeah, everyone wants to come and know that what they believe in is real. And it's not just any kind of a fairy tale.
What does this do for someone who has faith in God, the God of the Bible?
I hope it helps people to know that what they're reading about was here. I mean, when we read about Jesus, Jesus was growing up and he served here and he met real people in real places. He was walking from one place to another, looking down below us. You can see this beautiful Jezreel Valley that is spread. You can see the hill of Moreh. This is where Jesus was raising a dead boy when he saw a funeral walking and the mother was beside. He raised that dead boy. So I'm sorry, but I'm a man full of doubts. Even though I consider myself as a man of faith, I will always have doubts in everything. I'm like Thomas. I want to see facts. I want to see evidence. I believe in Jesus. And as a tour guide, I'm telling you, it's a great thing to walk and to see the archaeological site, to see the name of the mountains, the valleys, villages, and to know that it's not any kind of a fairy tale that we are believing it, but it's the truth.
I mean, the Bible's pretty bold, right? To actually name places, name dates, name people that you can still see markings of here right now. It's not like, ooh, fairy dust came from the sky, created a book, and now it tells us about unicorns, and we just have to trust that unicorns are real. There's things to touch and feel all over the place here.
All over. When they are the archaeologists, they can be, you know, secular archaeologists, but they dig and they find stuff, and they find names, and they find name of cities, and they find name of people that the Bible speaks about. These are real things.
Now this right here, you said this is the Jezreel Valley that then goes out to the Valley of Armageddon.
Yeah, you can see it's a wide valley and it fits to tanks, it fits to chariots, it fits to horses, it fits to major armies that can, you know, come here and camp and fight each other.
And what about over in this direction? What's of significance over here?
Again, we see the hill of Moreh and we see behind it the hills which are called the Gilboa Mountains. This is where King Saul and his three sons were killed in the war. Very, very sad story. And over there behind you, we can see this beautiful hill, the mountain which is called Mount Tabor. And this is where our story is going to take us today.
Now, not everyone is going to be able to follow all these stories that you're just kind of pointing around, because it would take a Bible scholar to understand all the things you just talked about. But I think the important thing for us to see right now is that these things are real and that should bolster our trust a bit. And that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at something that took place right there on that mountain, and it's about trust, the battlegrounds that we're in, the tensions that we have. The X factor for us is, do we have a trust in God? Is there something that's beyond who and what we are that can enable us to have a victory in the battles that we have?
You're right. We can get to a certain limit with our knowledge, and eventually we need to have the trust that God is real and He will work in our life. And this is exactly what we're going to do today.
Having to walk a little slow here. My goodness. Running sprints and wrestling women. Real encounters with God is more like real pain for Brian. My goodness. So I hope you're not judging me for how I just behaved with that woman. Speaking of judging, there are these people in the Bible who refer to as judges. You might say, people in the Bible, you mean people who have long black robes and have wooden handles that say, order in the court. No, not necessarily those kind of judges. Judges are these leaders in the Bible who are wedged between these figures like Moses, who does crazy great things in the beginning of the Bible, and then later on these people called kings. You've probably heard of Moses, you've probably heard of kings. But who were these judges? Judges are the people in the intermediary period who were the leaders of the nation of Israel, who do have a judicial function and make sure the disputes are settled and the right things are happening. And they also marshal the forces of Israel for battle. And these judges come in all sizes, all shapes, and all genders. In the book of Judges 4, verse 4, it talks of one of the judges. Her name is Deborah, and it says Deborah is a prophetess. A prophetess. and she was also married. Prophetess, what's that mean? Prophetess is a female prophet. In the nation of Israel, you had priests and you had prophets. There was this messaging that would go forth from man to God and from God to man and women. And priests were the ones that would give the messages up to God, and prophets were the ones who would give the messages from God down to people. So the role of a prophet, it's an odd one because you're hearing from God and you're telling people this is what God says and what God wants. And even the word prophetess, that's weird. That's a little odd. You know, when we start talking about women and leading, people start to get a little skittish, a little whoo, we really do. Corporate America obviously does. We've got glass ceilings in many corporations in America where a woman can't advance. We see in numerous institutions, unfortunately, in America, we see women being mistreated, and we see a level of confusion over how a man and a woman is to interact in different sectors of society. We see that through and through. And then we come to the church world, and we see all kinds of strange things happening in the church world, too. We see some people saying there really isn't any difference at all between men and women. There actually is a difference between men and women. I don't know if I have to explain it to you. I could show you some of the differences between a man and a woman, but I want to keep this PG, so we're not going to do that right now. And then there's other churches that say, well, no, there is no difference, or there is a difference, so women should be locked out of certain roles of significance in serving in the local church. Jesus always valued women. He had them around. And the Bible values women. It elevates them, as we see in the story of Deborah. In fact, wherever God's people, wherever Jesus' followers go, in all cultures, in all history, all over the world, we always see the status of women elevating. Always. Maybe not as high as it should be, not as high as God wants it to be, but every culture where Jesus and his people go, as they read the scriptures, women always have more rights. Women always end up having more value, whether it's being able to vote, whether it's being able to have property, whether it's being able to be testimony in a court of law, whether it's able to do any number of things. The cultures without the message of Jesus devalue women, and Jesus always elevates them. Why? Because women are created in the image of God, just like men are created in the image of God. We need each other, and each one of us God uses in specific and unique ways, including using women to fight battles. Against their arch enemies, the Canaanites, Deborah is marshaling her resources, using all of her leadership capacities to get the nation of Israel to go to war, to actually stimulate men to go to war, violent war that we're going to pick up over there, right there on that mountain, Tabor, Mount Tabor. We see amazing leadership by Deborah marshaling and motivating God's people to do his business right there. In verse 6 of Judges 4, it says, she sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you to go? Gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand. So what's going on there? We've got Sisera, who's the general of the opposing army, the Canaanites. Deborah says, we're going to work this the way it works in our culture. We're going to trust God, and we're going to go meet him up, and we're going to trust that God is going to deliver him into our hands. It's going to be God, but we're going to actually take action. We're going to move. It was a cultural expectation in the nation of Israel at that time. Our culture, the American culture, has some cultural expectations. Like, if you mess with us, we will mess with you. What happened after 9/11? Well, Uncle Sam's going to put a boot up your butt. It's the American way. So said Toby Keith. You mess with us? Sorry. Going to put a boot up your butt. That's the way we roll as Americans. I don't know how right that is, but I know that Deborah's understanding of how God moves was pretty darn good. Hey, let's just show up, let's start moving, and God will do the deal that he needs to do, but we need to start moving. She says to Barak, hey, has not God said this? Has he not spoken? Well, what are you doing here? Let's go. Chop, 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 chop. He's showing that in this battle, he doesn't have any trust in God. Trust is always shown by our actions. It is through our actions that we show that I trust, or if I don't act, I show that I don't trust. In Judges chapter 4, it says this, "And Barak said to her, 'If you will go with me, then I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go.' So she said, 'Well, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, there will be no glory for you either in the journey you are taking, for the Lord will send Sisera into the hand of a woman.'" So what's going on here? Barak is saying, well, I'll go against Sisera, the general and leader of the other army. I'm supposed to be the general of this army, and I'll go against the general of that army. If you go with me, I can't go be a man and go fight another man. Oh, I need you, Deborah. Will you be my mommy? Mommy, mommy. What a weenie boy. Oh my goodness. This is why they have the phrase called man up. We get a good bit of criticism at Crossroads talking to men. Let me tell you why we talk to men as frequently as we do at Crossroads. We talk to men because it seems that men are spiritually weaker than women and need more help. It really does. I mean, don't be confused by the amount of manly things that happen in culture, whether it's MMA or motorcycles or Dungeons and Dragons. Don't be surprised by those things, that those are somehow manly things. Oftentimes, those are the trappings of manhood that come when a man isn't being a man and being aggressive towards the things that he should be doing. And we see huge outages in men, perhaps more so than in women. And here we have a guy who's classically in that place of being a passive male. He knows what he should do, and he's not trusting God. And how do we know he's not trusting God? Because he's not acting. He's not going to war. He's not stepping into the battle. For men, let me talk to you for a moment. You need to do the right thing. You need to step into the battle. You need to step into the place that you're afraid of. You need to step and do the thing that people around you aren't doing because they're passive, because they're afraid. One of the questions I have for God is, man, why is there so many more apparently good godly women than there are godly men who are ready to come alongside them and marry them and take them out? And I think the answer is because there seems to be more men who are passive towards things like marriage. There's more men who are passive towards things like protecting. In the midst of all the bullying that's happening in schools, where's the men? Where's the 8-year-old men who are able to step outside of what's happening to culture and actually protect and say, no, sorry, this shouldn't happen? Why is it that I see women who seem to be much more prone to generosity than there are men prone to be generosity? Why is it there is a lack of aggression in the things that a man should do? I believe because the spirit of Barak unknowingly is inside of American men. I'll do it, but only if you'll go with me. Only if everything is guaranteed to go well. And when you have a passive man who won't do what he should be doing, you'll often find a woman, like Deborah, that's trying to prod him along and trying to get him to do the thing that he should be doing. Hey, women, let me set the record straight. Don't take your cues from society of who you are or who God has made you to be. Society and culture does an awful job telling any of us who we are, especially those of us who are women. You take your cues from God. You take your cues from people who understand God, who build into you. Don't take your cues from a culture that is really messed up in the area of gender relationships and understanding your gifts and your capacities. The story of Deborah, and the story of what Jesus does and says with women, and the story of Eve herself being created as an equal of Adam, says very clearly that you have capacities and you have capabilities that probably transcend your understanding or anybody else's understanding of who you are. That's what God says, and that's what He does.
So Leah, this week we're talking about trust, and you have a pretty powerful story of learning to trust God. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your faith journey?
I actually was involved in church when I was younger. Wonderful family. Went to college. Kind of felt alone. That's when I started to fall into OxyContin. Didn't tell my family. They never knew anything. Got a job at a restaurant. That's when I started with the ecstasy and all of the different types of things and finding my drug, I guess you could call it, which turned into opiates, and was on those for 14 years. Wanted to get sober. I knew in the back of my mind it was the wrong thing. I knew my back was turned on God. And I went to an AA meeting of all things, and there was someone there I had dated in college.
So you meet this guy, or
yes,
you see this guy.
I see this guy I had dated in college. He said I may not like his method, but he would come over and get me high. He came over that night and shot me up with heroin. He stayed for 3 days. I was hooked.
So at the end of this 3 days, your life is different.
Yes. In my head, I'm thinking I'm not this person, and I'm looking at other people on drugs like I'm not like them, but I was. That's a really hard reality to face.
You were trusting in those drugs for something.
I was trusting in those drugs for comfort, for friendship. I met my husband in January, mid-January. We were actually going to pick up heroin.
So you guys start dating.
Mm-hmm.
But you're both still using at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there a point in your relationship where you just said, you know what, we've got to do something different here?
We both wanted to, desperately. And
did you talk about it regularly?
Yes.
Is this something that you talked about?
Yes. Yes. We didn't want the lifestyle, but the lifestyle kept pulling us back in.
You and your husband are trapped.
Yes. If I had had a gun, I probably wouldn't be here right now. Waiting for those morning hours for your dealers to wake up is a very hard time. Not only are you sick, but you're also dying to feel that needle go into your arm. I was scared.
But you had an encounter with God.
I had gotten a big shot. I call it the big shot, the one where you really get high. And I looked in my bathroom mirror and I saw all of these things that hadn't happened yet unfold in that mirror. My family, you know, finding out, my family telling me they're not going to help me anymore. My brother finding out that I had stolen so much from him.
Almost like a film playing in your
head. It was like a film playing in my head. And it was like somebody just pushing me, like, you need to listen. You need to wake up and pay attention. This is serious. You're going to die. And July 3rd, I had gotten my shot and went and laid down. And my dog started to whine. And my husband said he heard what's called the death rattle. It started giving me CPR. I woke up in the ambulance on Narcan. I had IVs in my neck. They were asking me how much heroin I'd done. There's three options and that's it. I'm either going to die, I'm going to go to jail, or I'm gonna overcome this.
First, it's going to be a walk and talk, and then talk about what the left house came to do.
So, Turiel, in the story we're looking at today, the nation of Israel has 10,000 foot soldiers. Their enemy has 900 chariots. 10,000 to 900 seems like Israel has the advantage, and yet they're afraid. Why?
Well, first of all, I would start with saying that the fact that it speaks about 900 chariots doesn't mean that they had another 30,000 soldiers with them. We tend to forget that. But all these chariots were like tanks. It's a big machine, you know, it has its wheel, it can drive very fast. You can have three, four people maybe even on each chariot. They can have a lot of load on it. They can have different weapons, you know, they can have spears, they can have swords. And if such a machine is running towards you, it's actually power and technology.
So it's a massive advantage that they have.
Yes, definitely.
This is always part of the issue in warfare is technology. Ancient wars and current wars. We're in a site right now that memorializes some wars for your country. Tell us about that.
Yeah. First of all, we are here in a memorial site. You know, we are talking about there was a battle taking place here. And in some times through history, Israel was in the lower point related to technology. These days, Israel have a lot of technology. And this is what people, unfortunately, trust today, the technology.
Israel,
trust technology today.
Yeah, yeah. We must remember that it didn't help the enemies over 3,000 years ago that they had the technology. When God is not with you, well, you want to have God with you in your side always. Doesn't matter what technology you have.
Israel was at a massive disadvantage with technology in our story today with Deborah. We can choose to trust in technology, or we can choose to actually trust in God. Any other thoughts on that?
Always God. Always God. Remember, you know, we talk about Goliath. He was giant. He had his armor and sword. We talk about these big empires, Assyria, Babylon, Rome. They're all gone with all their technology. And there is one little nation that their technology was God. And we're still here, thank God.
Deborah is known in Judges 5:7 as the mother of Israel, the mother of Israel. I love that. We see this woman who's strong, she's courageous, she takes action, she trusts, and she retains every ounce of her femininity. Last I knew, the only humans that could bear children are women. So she embraces that title, I am a woman, and she trusts God, the most faithful person, one of the most faithful people I know, is the mother of my children, Libby. When the call came with the offer for us to leave Pittsburgh to go to Cincinnati to help start this church called Crossroads, my feet were initially cold, and it was her who had the faith to say, no, come on, we can do this. She was prodding me on to say yes to that, and as a result, we have opportunities in our lives and our family, and Crossroads has opportunities, all because actions were taken. Action creates opportunity. There's so many things that are a part of our church at Crossroads that we are experiencing the blessings of that only came when we took action. There's this thing in Cincinnati that we put our necks on the line for called CityLink. We invested millions and millions and millions of dollars in a new way to build into the working poor, and countless lives have been affected and are being affected right now. And people from all over the nation are coming to Cincinnati to learn what took place. It wasn't just that. It's things like feeding children in Bolivia and in Nicaragua and experiencing the pleasure of God that comes from that, all because we stepped out and we took an opportunity. What opportunities are there for you that could bring unique blessings? They decide to take this opportunity and find how God may meet them as they go against this massive, massive army of the Canaanites. They have the best in technology to try to sweep away the armies of Israel and carry the day. But God meets them when they step out. Here's what happens. So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And from heaven the stars fought, from their courses they fought against Sisera. The torrent Kishon swept them away, the ancient torrent, the torrent Kishon. So in the midst of this valley that we're in, God shows up with the X factor. That's how God makes sure he gets the glory. He shows up with the X factor by doing something in the stars, something in the skies. There's some kind of water feature that takes place. We're not sure exactly what this looks like. The scripture is a bit muted on it. All we know is God shows up and water starts dumping down, and chariots need to have dry ground to move their wheels. And what happens when a heavy mass encounters water, encounters mud? It looks and sounds something like this. Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, let's hear that again, just in case you didn't. Oh, there it was. Yeah, they get stuck. They can move no further. They are neutralized. All of their advantages are gone. And the leader of this army, Sisera, takes off. He takes off. He must have been in his high-class armor. And in the midst of this armor, he has got to move because now he's going to get routed. He runs 30-ish miles to get to where he can actually be safe. And in the midst of his safety, he's going to find out things are even going to get more dangerous. It's been a hard 30-ish miles for Sisera. And he feels like his hard day is about to end. He comes to the place, the location of one of the allies of the Canaanite nation, one of the allies of the enemies of God. He comes to Heber the Kenite's camp, specifically his tent. He's thinking, I got it. It's all good, man, I've made it. My bad day is over. No, his bad day is gonna get worse. You know why? Because he's gonna come back to another faithful woman. He's gonna see another woman who trusts God and is strong and is courageous. Her name is Jael, and he walks up and he sees this, oh, let me help you. Let me come and be with you. And she comes out and she says to him, oh, I'm going to take care of you right now. And Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me. Do not be afraid. So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with the rug. And he said to her, please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. And he said to her, stand at the opening of the tent, and if any man comes and asks you, is anyone here? Say, no. It's kind of like an action movie, and the momentum has changed. He's tired. He feels like he's now found safety, but you can hear the ominous music. His end is going to come. He comes inside of the tent. She tucks him in. She puts a little rug over him, making him nice and cuddly and cozy. He thinks that he's safe. Little does he know, he's encountered another woman who chooses to trust in a God that he doesn't know. So she tiptoes inside of the tent. She finds his little head. Finds his little head, and he's really happy because he feels really safe. This is him as he sleeps, nice and happy, and he's snoring. Little Z's are coming up. He's got his head down on the side of the pillow, feeling all safe and secure. And it says she comes up to him and she puts a peg on his temple. And to illustrate, the Bible says she comes out, she takes this peg, and she slams it, goes all the way through his head and sticks in the ground. That was so fun. Can we do that again? Let's do that again. What are all the ways that you could kill a watermelon?
You guys just gotta run at it.
Oh, that's good.
Joust!
Oh, I am so sticky right now.
Oh! Oh! You did way to stick with the team.
That's brutal.
Back to the story. You might think the preacher man's embellishing a little bit. Let's actually take a look at what it really says. But Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand, and then she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. So he died. So he died. You think? Yeah, I'd call that dying. This is another woman who, out of trust, chooses the right side to be on in the midst of the battle, and she is going to get rewards from God as well. Actions always have rewards. If not now, eventually, or in the afterlife. I can tell you right now, for you to have the reward of being a victor in that battleground, it's going to take trust. It's going to take you embracing who God has created you to be and aggressively going forward in trust.
Thankfully, I had made the call after I saw that in the mirror to get help. July 7th of 2014 was the day that I went to the doctor, and we did heroin that day. July 8th, we woke up and made the decision that if we don't stop now, we're never going to. And now we have a life I never thought I'd have.
How long have you been clean?
I've been clean for 3 years, and it will be 2 months, and I thank God.
When you are coming out of a life of drug use, you have to change people, places, and things.
Yes.
You can't stay with the same people, places, and things. In some ways, you have to give up what you've trusted in.
Right.
And you have to move to a different source of
trust. Giving up one safety blanket that's a false safety blanket to actually go to God.
And so talk about Crossroads Andover. Like, what did you find here?
I asked my husband if he would go, and I never thought he would say yes, and he did. I said, we'll just go one time. If you don't like it, we'll never go back again. And in the car on the way out, he said, I want to keep coming back. And we've missed maybe 2 Sundays since. It's no longer going to a drug dealer and getting heroin. It's coming to church and, you know, seeking God and seeking answers.
So you moved from trusting in heroin to trusting in God and finding God, as you said, as your comfort, as your security.
Yes.
What does it mean for you to trust in God today?
That there's a higher power that I can give that to, and he can help me through that. And I trust him too, and to know what's best for me always, and that he's not going to lead me astray, and that he's not going to leave me alone, even in my darkest days. God's there.
Part of trust for you is having a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you relate to God? How do you engage God?
I talk to him all the time. I talk to him a lot, and I love that I can share that with my husband and that we can pray together. And my husband and I got baptized together on the same day.
So talk about that. What did it mean for you to get baptized?
I had made the decision I wanted to be baptized on Christmas Eve. I just felt it. I felt it. I knew it was time. I knew it was time to accept Jesus Christ as my Savior. And I told my husband that, and I let him take his time on, you know, making that decision, and we wanted to do it together.
You've now shifted your trust, and in a lot of ways, based on walking away from an addiction, based on surrendering your life to Jesus and getting baptized, getting in community, you've done these things to demonstrate that you trust God with your life now.
Yes.
So talk about your hope for the future.
My hope for the future is to get involved in the addiction recovery program here at Crossroads. I want to be able, if my story can help somebody, I want to show that there's life after heroin. There's a lot of people out there on the streets now buying drugs right now, this very second, and a lot of parents grieving. And I want them to know that there is hope. I don't want to live in the shadows anymore. I want to live facing the sun. That's the way I see it, always.
Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. If that verse were written today, it might say, some trust in tanks, others trust in cars. All of us have a choice of what we're going to trust in. Deborah chose to trust in God. She encouraged and tried to lead people around her to trust in God. Everything you trust in that is not God, it will rust. It will decrease in value. It will be eaten by moths. It will go through recession. It will leave you wanting. It won't stand the test of time. The only entity that can stand the test of time is God himself, his very name, his very identity, his character. I encourage you to choose to trust in Him, not any of the other things I mentioned, though you may have them, enjoy them, be blessed by them, but don't trust in them. They can't be the source of our identity or the source of our security. Let's be like Deborah, and let's come on her downline and put ourselves under the trust of God, His identity. Maybe you've never done that before. Maybe you've done that before, but you need a refresher. Whoever we are, let's just pray that we have a new day right now with God. God, I thank you for what you've taught us today. I thank you for the great ancient hero of Deborah. And I thank you for being you, for not going out of style, for not decreasing, for being ever present and ever omnipotent. And I pray that we would learn to trust more. I pray that that thing that we've been wrestling with, we would come under your hand and we would trust in you and we would act as the faithful one of old, the one of Deborah. And I pray these things according to who you are, according to the identity and character of who you are as seen in Jesus. Amen.
On the next episode of Real Encounters with God, we follow the story of Joshua and the battleground of aggression.
You had a real encounter with God. If you enjoyed this video, share it with your friends, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and check out the rest of the Real Encounter series. Thanks for watching.